Yeah? And you don't have a mic.
No.
Trish.
Well, maybe you're yelling.
Anyway, I don't think there are many people.
It's a small group. Okay.
Right.
Are you translating also?
No.
Just joking. Okay. So again, to remind everyone, we are doing a talk about what Prabhupada had to say about Krishna conscious Grihastha married life. Now, who understands English very, good, pretty good? All right, so you're okay then. You just have a small group then.
Yeah.
All right, otherwise I'd give you the mic if it was, the other way.
Oh, no,
it's fine. We just want to facilitate the group the best. Whatever works the best. So, again, my name is Anutama Das, and my wife, who just went out to check on Irmala's class to see how many people were there. Here she is. How many people?
Only 8 people. They
too. Oh, so everyone is apparently eating or sleeping or swimming. Or, relaxing. She only has 8 people. So this is good. We have a lot more people.
We should be in the
people are tired.
So we have been married for 28 years.
Wow.
And just to fill you in, our marriage was semi-arranged. Namely, we did not date. We did not talk, hardly. We did not go to the movies together or hold hands or any of that before we were married. I basically came to the point in my life where I said, it's time for me to get married before something horrible happens. While I'm still an honest guy, let me get married and continue to be honest. And so I surveyed the ocean of the Brahmacharinis. And I said, no, maybe, no, maybe, nah, maybe, no, there's a good one. I like that one. Best looking Brahmacharini in the group. This was in Bombay in 1980. So I had a go-between. Go-between means a liaison, someone who would talk to her. So I sent my friend over to her and made a proposal. And I got a message back that, yes, maybe, sounds good. So I said, okay, great. Let's get married. Set a date. So we set a date. We got married. Then we started holding hands and talking and finding out who we were, who she was, who I was. And 28 years later, and 2 children later, and 2 grandchildren later, we're still figuring out who we are together. It's ever fresh. So anyway, just a little history on that. In the West, Western countries, probably here in Croatia too, people date for years and live together and so many things. And still, after marriage, they still get divorced. So Vedic society is generally, we don't do all those things. We just get married and then we learn about it all later. So today we wanted to talk about We talked about different subjects. I wanted to talk about, in Prabhupada's books, there are many discussions by Prabhupada where things seem very negative about family life. And the sannyasis are famous for beating on these points all the time. And a lot of us in Krishna consciousness have a twisted idea, concept, as to, you know, what is it? You know, are we supposed to hate marriage, love marriage, hate women, love women? Mm-hmm. What is the right thing? We hear different, you know, contradictions all the time. So it's actually, this is in the section we're reading in the morning, Glories of Devotional Service. This is Kapila Muni talking to his mother, Devahuti. This whole chapter. So, in the purport, well, here, let me see the. So, I'll read the verse. It's verse 39 and 40 chapter 25. Thus the devotee who worships me, the all-pervading Lord of the universe, in unflinching devotional service, gives up all aspirations to be promoted to the heavenly planets or to become happy in this world with wealth, children, cattle, home, or anything in relationship with the body. I take him to the other side of birth and death. So that's the verse. And in the verse, the Lord says that he gives up all aspirations to become happy in this world with wealth, children, home, and anything related to the body. So that doesn't sound very good for aspiring householders. Because householder means wealth, children, and things related with the body. So what does Prabhupada say in the purport here? So he says, such a pure devotee does not care for what is going to happen in the next life or in this life. He does not even care for family, children, or society. He fully engages in the service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita that without the knowledge of the devotee, the Lord arranges for his devotee to be immediately transferred to his transcendental abode just after leaving his body. After quitting his body, he does not go into the womb of another mother. The ordinary common living entity, after death, is transferred to the womb of another mother according to his karma to take another type of body. But as far as the devotee is concerned, he is at once transferred to the spiritual world in association with the Lord. So, I mean, there's a more to the purport, but the point that I had underlined here, Prabhupada says, such a pure devotee. Now, first of all, he's talking about pure devotee, not talking about the average devotee. That he comes to the point where he doesn't care what's going to happen in his next life or in this, and he does not even care for family, children, or society. So, now, over the years, leaders of our society and sannyasis have taken quotes like this and misinterpreted it and began preaching that all of us young men and women in our 20s should not, and also all the family people and householders who are devotees, should not worry about their families, should not worry about wealth, should not worry about their body, that they should just go out and preach Krishna consciousness to their fullest extent and Krishna will take care of you. And don't worry about any of this. Because Krishna says he'll take care of his devotee. So this was the misinterpretation of these types of purports. First Prabhupada's talking about a pure devotee, and particularly he's talking about a devotee who has already gone through the Varnashram. He's particularly talking about a sannyasi. And in tomorrow's class, which I'm giving, it mentions that the sadhu, whose qualities we just read today, also indicates a sannyasi. And sannyasi means one who's done with all of the worldly activities. He's an older person, generally speaking. He's had his family, he's earned his money, he's taken care of his wife, he's settled his children, and now he's retired. And he's now ready to focus fully on the duties of life, which is to meditate on the Supreme and to serve the Supreme and ultimately return to the Supreme. So this is the deeper understanding that Krishna is not talking about a 20-year-old man who's married for 2 years and has little children. He doesn't say to the householder, don't worry about your family and don't worry about wealth. But he's talking about older people who have already gone through the whole Varnashram program. In fact, in the paragraph above this, there's one section, Prabhupada says, a devotee has that much mental strength that he prays to the Lord, may I be born again and again, but let me be born in the home of your pure devotee so that I may again get a chance to develop myself. So a devotee is praying, let me take birth again in a devotee's family. And there's a prayer by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, a song, where he describes, let me take birth even as the insect in the house of a devotee, but to speak of as the child of a devotee. So the devotee's praying like this. So say you have a child. This child happens to be the person who was praying in the last life, to let me take birth in the family of a devotee. So here he comes into your family, and then all of a sudden the husband is hearing verses about taking sannyas, and he's thinking it means me. And, you know, family life, is, after all, is a lot of work and responsibility. So I'm going to take sannyas, or I'm going to at least leave my family and go out and sell books and preach Krishna consciousness. And therefore, the wife is left with a child or two, no income, and in great difficulty. So here this devotee who is praying, let me take birth in a family of devotees, is all of a sudden abandoned by his father, because the father is thinking, this is a trouble. These children, these wife, it's all, you know, this is not my idea of spiritual life. My idea of spiritual life is, you know, to be free and no worries, no responsibilities. So that soul who has come, all of a sudden he's, you know, been shortchanged. Shortchanged means, you know that word. So the devotee, he wants to take birth in a nice devotee family and be raised a devotee and have a nice devotee mother and a nice devotee father. He doesn't want a father that's going to run off. So we want to fulfill this devotee's prayer by giving him an opportunity to become, again, finish up his Krishna conscious development so that he becomes also a pure devotee. And as Prabhupada said in that second paragraph, that he does not come back again, that Krishna makes special arrangements so that he goes back to home, back to Godhead, back to Krishna. And there was one other section in the Bhagavad Gita, which I'll also read, in relation to responsibility. Well, let me ask if anyone has any questions, because sometimes questions come up and you're holding and holding them and you forget them after a while. So this is kind of an interaction presentation, and we're happy for questions because it helps expand our realm of discussion. So have any of you had this experience of hearing a class that was very negative toward family life? Or is everything beautiful here? You've heard of the class like that. Did it come from a sannyasi or a brahmachari? No comment. Sometimes even the grihasthas give these classes. Because, I don't know why. Maybe frustration or something. But I've heard it from all categories of people. More often from the renounced order of life. So, this was in the Bhagavad Gita, in the third chapter, text 33. I'll read the verse. So, even a man of knowledge acts according to his own nature. For everyone follows the nature he has acquired from the three modes of material nature. What can repression accomplish? This is a fairly famous verse. And in the purport, Prabhupada says that Krishna consciousness helps one to get out of the material entanglement, even though one may be engaged in his prescribed duties in terms of material existence. Now, what that means, prescribed duties in terms of material existence, means varnashram, means brahmachari, grihastha, these are duties. But Krishna consciousness, which is transcendental and beyond varnashram, helps us to get out no matter what position we're in. So therefore, Prabhupada says, without being fully in Krishna consciousness, one should not give up his occupational duties. There it is right there. Without being fully Krishna conscious, one should not give up his occupational duties. So in other words, don't abandon your family because the bills are getting too big. Or your children are a botheration, or your wife is a botheration. He says, not until you're fully Krishna conscious can you think about doing that. And being fully Krishna conscious means your liberated soul, means you're pure devotee. So no one should suddenly give up his prescribed duties and become a so-called yogi or transcendentalist artificially. Prabhupada says yogi and transcendentalist. We should also add sannyasi, which is the same. It is better to be situated in one's position and try to attain Krishna consciousness under superior training. Thus one may be freed from the clutches of Krishna's maya. So how many of us are married here? How many of us have felt that our family life is maya? You know, we've had a bad day, and you've thought, this is really, I'd be happier off if I didn't have all this going on, didn't have these children, didn't have this house and husband. If I would just back being a brahmacharini or a brahmachari again. But Krishna, Prabhupada doesn't say that here. That it's better to be situated in one's natural position and try to obtain Krishna consciousness under superior training. Meaning that spirit training means, of course, the spiritual master, the pure devotee. Better we hear from him. So when we have difficulty, we should go to the superior training, approach the guru, and inquire from him, about our position and what we should do. Thus, one may be freed from the clutches of Krishna's maya. So that's how to get out of maya. Stay where you are, continue what you're doing, until you become fully Krishna conscious, as Prabhupada said here. And then one can become, move to the next stage. But until one is fully Krishna conscious, which means liberated soul, one has to continue working his way out of the modes of material nature. So, any questions?
Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Also, if you go for a marriage which is very bad for one's spiritual consciousness, for example, a wife doesn't want to follow any of the principles, doesn't want to be a devotee anymore, or if the husband gets the drinking or beating or whatever. So does this sticking to one's original position also go for, not like in those situations?
You want to answer that or not?
I just need to translate.
What's that? You know, what do you do when your husband's gone off or your wife's gone off?
Then you've got to separate. I mean, if the husband is beating you and there's always drinking and beating and if there's no solution.
Right. Well, this was kind of the question that was asked this morning, if you were in the class. One man asked, what happens if, you know, one of the spouses is, left Krishna consciousness practice and the other is still in? You know, he's gone off drinking or he's, you know, abusing the wife, beating the wife. So Vyasaki, who was giving the class, asked, well, Anutama, why don't you answer that question? So I said, well, I have seen couples, and this I have seen couples, where not that the wife or the husband are being bad to each other, but one is not actively Krishna conscious and the other one is. But they have worked out an arrangement where they don't bother each other. You know, they let them do what they want to do in their spiritual progress. And I've seen marriages like that go on for years and years and years. And everybody's happy enough. Because there's responsibilities, there's children, and there's other factors that make it important to work together. But in a case where there is abuse, gross breaking of the principles, illicit sex outside of marriage, intoxication, and all these things, it's...
And the partner doesn't try to rectify themselves. And, you know, it's happening repeatedly, but not just a one thing. You know, it might happen just once, and then you can forgive, you can work it out, and, you know, mend your marriage again. But if one spouse keeps on doing that, abusing the partner, or drinking, or going out of the marriage all the time, then, and there's no solution, then there should be separation. You know, we don't say stay in abusive marriage and be abused. Sometimes there has to be separation.
Of course, separation doesn't mean divorce necessarily. It just means they are physically separate from living under this in the same house. And that way you can't beat somebody you can't reach. You know, she's not there. You know, you can't bother them. Because we never advocate divorce. I mean, there have been many people that have separated, and then maybe they get back together again if they, you know, atone or rectify. So.
But what if the wife is young and separation doesn't work?
If they're separated, and still the guy's up. Well, Arjuna City did that. I mean, we're being the real world here. This is the real world. We're talking. I know personally many devotees who had this situation. One devotee, the husband was an alcoholic. They separated. The guru said, I don't want you to get divorced. Divorce is bad. Try to work it out. She tried for a long time. And she really prayed hard to Krishna to, my guru wants this, and I have a child, young son, and I should really try to, I pray to Krishna, my son, my husband sees the light. But he never saw the light particularly. Ultimately, she did remarry after some years.
She
And she has a very nice husband. She's actually a counselor right now in the Grihastha Vision Group. And she's a professional counselor, you know, with a college degree. Numbers of people that have separated and ultimately have remarried and married better partners. Now, of course, this is not the best solution. The best solution is that the abusing partner become Krishna conscious. But this doesn't always happen. More often than not, it doesn't happen. And in those cases, these people do remarry. I mean, is this the blessings of Prabhupada that this should happen? I can't say. But in the long run, these people have become very happy, and their future Krishna consciousness in the new marriage has been successful. And I've known these people for decades, and things are good. So. Sometimes that's the answer. And we have our perfect Vedic society, and we have the world in 2008. Kali Yuga world. Yeah.
Isn't the higher purpose actually to always to be Krishna conscious? So we have some rules and regulations, but the higher purpose is to be Krishna conscious.
Mm-hmm.
So if that marriage really kind of destroys Krishna consciousness, isn't it the higher purpose then to get, I don't know, remarried and get more Krishna consciousness?
Did you understand it? What's the last? Yes, even the higher.
Sometimes. Well,
but the point about remarriage, I didn't catch
the highest purpose is to be Krishna conscious.
Right.
And if you're in a marriage that doesn't allow you to progress, then isn't it
better to get remarried?
But then Prabhupada didn't do that.
Prabhupada didn't encourage remarriage. Prabhupada, you know, people would write Prabhupada and say, I want to get a divorce. Prabhupada got a lot of letters like that. Prabhupada never, you know, openly said, this is a policy of mine. Sure, your wife is in Maya, your husband's in Maya. Go ahead, get a divorce and get a better Krishna conscious spouse. He never did that. So.
Srila Prabhupada himself, who's a pure devotee and Jagat Guru, he had a wife that wasn't Krishna conscious. She was not supportive of him being a devotee. But Srila Prabhupada stayed with her, had 5 children. He did his duties, and when his daughter was married and his children were grown up, then he decided, now I can leave my wife and take sannyas. So he didn't abandon her and find another wife. But Prabhupada stayed with her, although she wasn't supportive of his Krishna consciousness at all. She didn't help Srila Prabhupada in his preaching. She wasn't favorable to Krishna consciousness. So we should follow his example. Not the slightest bit of problem. Now we should leave our spouse and go find another spouse. But we should try and work at it. And, you know, if they are not being Krishna conscious, then we should pray to Krishna. And we should be Krishna conscious, and they can see our example. And maybe they'll come to that high standard also. With Krishna's and Guru's help.
In fact, in the bottom of the purport on tomorrow's verse, it says, Prabhupada says, but if for sense gratification a person renounces all such obligations, he is punished by the laws of nature. Well, I'll read the sentence before that, too. When he gives up all such obligations for the sake of the service of the Supreme Lord, he is not punished for such renunciation of obligations. But for sense gratification, a person renounces all such obligations, he is punished by the laws of nature. So what this means is, like in Prabhupada's case, he renounced everything for the service of the Supreme Lord to spread Krishna consciousness. But if we renounce our family and our wife because they're troublesome, and for sense gratification, to jump into another marriage, just for the sake of enjoying with another person, then that then he is punished by the laws of nature. So different purposes for renouncing the world. You know, one is renouncing to serve Krishna fully after one's duties is performed, and one is being artificially irresponsible and renouncing for sense gratification. I don't like my wife, she's trouble, I'll get a new one. And I don't like that one, I'll get another one. I don't like that one, I'll get another one. Then he'll be punished by the laws of material nature. So. Yes?
I have a stupid question.
Okay.
I was in Mayapur this winter, and a good friend of me, Mataji, she got divorced. Mm-hmm. And now she's living alone in the Kashta area in Mayapur. Mm-hmm. And about the case, what you told us, I will ask you, the Mataji, she must marry between a half and a year, because when she not marries in this time, they will kick her out of the temple area, because she cannot live alone in the Kashta area. Can you...
In the Grihastha area.
Grihastha area, yes. Can you agree this? Because this is really to jump from one marriage to the other. This is exactly what the opposite of what you told us. Is this possible, or is it really just a thing that's speaking around to people?
Well, and Prabhupada also wanted that women were married. Prabhupada wanted that women should be have a husband and have protection. Now, I don't know the history. You know, did the husband dump her? Did she dump him? You know, who was at fault? You know, these
problems.
You know, who took the first step to dissolve the marriage? You know, that has something to do with it in terms of, you know, who's working toward, you know, what was the motivation. But in Mayapur, I don't know, you know, the managemental, you know, living in the Grihastha quarters, they probably don't want single women living in the Grihastha area.
1.5 years is really a short time.
Yeah. I mean, she could certainly live anywhere else in ISKCON and not have that demand put on her. You know, Mayapur, I'm not sure how they're running it there. But she could certainly come here to Croatia and live happily ever after in the Brahmacharini ashram doing service, I would think. And I'm not a manager here either. She can certainly come to Washington. At least I can speak for my home temple. And no one would bother her. As long as she was happy doing her service, she could be there forever. So. Question?
Hi.
Yeah.
You're the first answer. I was just like ask you, I don't have anything opposite that I want that I some contradictory to you, but I like say that once Prabhupada said also that his sister, she was cooking meat for his husband. But she was she was like your devotee.
I was going to bring that up, but I didn't.
Pishima was Srila Prabhupada. Pishima, Srila Prabhupada's sister. She was married to, a person that wasn't a devotee. And she had to cook meat for him, and she had to serve him. But she never left her husband. Pishima stayed with her husband. And because of her piety and her chastity and her submissiveness, he became a devotee. Srila Prabhupada said towards the end of his life, he became a devotee because of Pishima. So you can see how sometimes a woman who's very chaste, she can bring her husband to Krishna consciousness, and Pishima did that.
And of course that's Indian society, Bengal, 75 years ago. So, you know, social situation. Divorce was not in the wasn't accepted socially. So, whereas, right. So what time do we have now? We have a wedding to go to. 15 minutes. 5:30. Okay. So today we're celebrating a wedding. So this is very exciting. Everyone loves weddings. I remember where we used to have weddings in the old New York Temple during the 70s. It was always one of our dear God brothers. He was, biting the dust, and all the brahmacharis would be lamenting. We'd see him up in the ashram the day before. Prabhu, don't do it, don't do it. Don't leave us. And I remember all the brahmacharinis would all get kind of agitated at the wedding. You know, when will my turn come? When will my prince take me away from this ashram, brahmacharini ashram? Because we're all living in the ashram in those days. It's a funny environment. And I remember also our dear brahmachari friend who got married. As soon as he got married, we never saw him anymore. He joined another world, the Grihastha ashram, the Grihastha people, those people in white that lived across the street in the apartments. He never talked to us anymore. So it was interesting. So, but nowadays it's a little, we give all our blessings to the new married people. And anyone can be Krishna conscious. There's no restriction. Of course, I think everyone knows that, although sometimes it's not preached like that. Grihe tako, vane tako, sadahari bole tako. Whether you're a householder, whether you're a renunciate, everyone can chant, Hari, Hari. Hari, Hari. I don't know, what do they say around here? You have any strange philosophies floating in Croatia?
One brahmachari told me just prior to my wedding that Grihastha ashram is like a frozen state of spiritual life. Whatever progress you have made as a brahmachari, you stop there and then you take off when you take vanaprastha.
Yeah. So it means if you can't go back to Godhead, you can't make any further progress to go back to Godhead while you're married, is what the meaning of that. And of course, we know that's not true.
All of Lord Chaitanya's associates were married,
except for Gadara Pandit, all the Panchatattva. They all were married except for Gadara. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they were all married. And obviously they went back to Godhead.
I got a quick story. Pundarik Vijayaniti. How many of you have heard of Pundarik Vijayaniti in the Lord Chaitanya Lila? Okay, a lot of people read the books, good. So Pundarik Vijayaniti, he externally looked like a wealthy businessman. In fact, Gadadhar was invited to visit him. So he came into the room. He was sitting in a nice room, and he was sitting on some silk cushions, and there was a man on either side of him fanning him. And he described that he had long hair, and it was combed nicely and oiled, coconut oil. And he had nice silk shirt on, silk dhoti. And he was very aristocratic looking, like a wealthy businessman. So, and Gadadhar was told that this man's a great devotee. So he walked in, he said to his friend, "Look at this guy, he looks like a materialist, common man, wealthy man. I have my doubts." So then his friend said, no, just wait, you will see. So then another person started reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, some 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, a description of the features of Lord Krishna. So Pundarik Vijayaniti, as soon as he heard these verses, He went into mad ecstatic ecstasy. He started tearing his shirt, and then he fell off his seat and was rolling on the ground. It took, I think it was several men at least, maybe up to 8 men, were trying to just hold him down. He was like having like epileptic fit, but transcendental fit. We've all seen epileptics sometimes. They're on the ground. You can't stop them. So he was like this. And this went on for 8 hours. 8 hours he was in trance. Finally he went unconscious. And then Gadadhar said, I have misjudged this man. That one should not judge a person by his externals, but by his character, his nature. So then the next day he felt like he had committed an offense to Pundarik. So he said, the only way I can rectify this offense is if I accept him as my guru. So he asked permission and to Lord Chaitanya, please let me accept Pundarik as my guru. And he said, yes, yes, please. You know, he is, you know, my great devotee. So Pundarik Vijayaniti became the guru of Gadadhar Pandit. This story is there in the Chaitanya Bhagavad in full detail. So then several days later, Pundarik Vijayaniti comes to meet Lord Chaitanya. And this meeting is such a wonderful description. Lord Chaitanya stands up to greet him. And they see each other, and they're hugging, they're embracing each other, just like, you know, devotees embrace each other. And it describes first, Lord Chaitanya is soaking Pundarik with his tears. Imagine two people, you know, like we hug each other for what, 10 seconds, Hari Bol Prabhu, you know, and we're not crying either. They're hugging for 2 hours. 2 hours, not letting go. They're hugging, like the description is, like they are merging into each other. And the tears are coming out. And he's drenching him. So this was Lord Chaitanya's exchange with Pundarik. What a person. What relation they have. So. And he was a householder, wealthy householder, so he went back to Godhead, guaranteed. He made plenty of advancement as a householder. Yes, Prabhu. Of Virsabhanu, Virsabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamani Hiripriya, Radharani. And he was in Krishna Lila, he was Radharani's father. So all the associates of Lord Chaitanya were not ordinary beings. They were not, you know, like us. We were something, and then we became, by Guru's mercy, devotees. But certainly we can, you know, we can read about them and see how they dealt with each other. So, yes.
No, you finished. Question.
But that was just an exciting exchange that always sticks in my mind. I always think of Radhanath Swami when I read that story. He doesn't hug me for 2 hours, but he'll hug you for 2 minutes, which is a long time. He'll just hang on to you. And it's a genuine hug, not just social hug, a devotional hug. How many people here have been hugged by Radhanath Swami? Oh, you're lucky.
We ladies are not so fortunate.
Yeah, the women won't get this chance in this lifetime. You can hug Mother Irmala.
But now, You have a little daughter. Your daughters are fortunate. My daughter, my granddaughters are very fortunate. They get hugged by Radhanath Swami all the time. In fact, my oldest granddaughter, she's one exchange she had with him. She was sitting on his lap for about half an hour. He was holding on, and then she fell asleep on his lap. And then she woke up, and he was still talking to her parents. Yeah, and he's always hugging her, and she's just very comfortable with him. Even the second granddaughter. Once she was, he gave her a strawberry to eat, and then she took it, and she bit it, and she turned around to him, said, "You want to eat it?" And he took it, and he put it into his mouth, and he said, "Maha, maha, prashadam."
I think Radhanath Swami doesn't come to Croatia, does he?
No, he comes once.
Once he came. It's, yeah. It's better than never. You're lucky. Yeah. Yeah, he's a very special person. Right. So I think we'll end. We'll get ready for the wedding. We can. The purpose of the devotees is to shower our blessings. Okay, I'll get this. To bless the couple. And wish them happiness and success in their path on Krishna consciousness and in their path on you know, this world of raising family. Souls are waiting to come. They're praying, as we read, "Let me take birth in a devotee's family." So somebody up there is waiting to become their child. So you had a question?
But I don't know if you are finished now. I'm not like now start
well,
new question.
Well, it's time for the wedding almost, but go ahead. I just don't want to go over.
We hear right now some glories of Grihastha Ashram, which is very nice. Some balance after...
Yeah, right. It's usually 90-10.
But still I have a question.
So bring it up to 30, 60, 70.
What about this? I think Prabhupada said that... Grihastha have 50% chance back to spiritual world, because still this challenge is there. And
well, it's certainly easier. It's, you know, a renounced person has a lot less troubles in life. The only problem the renounced person has is if he has still desires to associate with woman in this world, and that's the only problem they have. Because they don't have to worry about, you know, family life. But we have seen practically that how many sannyasis have there ever been in ISKCON since the beginning? And how many are there still? And what percentage of them left, got married, and these things? So, of course, if one is old, hey, here we go. 50%?
Yeah, from the Sannyas Ministry, it's only 50%. They're doing better than the Grihasthas.
All right. So it's still safer to be a sannyasi. Because our divorce rate is probably 85-90%. So the sannyasi fall down is only 50%. So there, we have some statistics there.
That's why we need encouragement and preaching in the Grihastha.
I mean, everyone is struggling. There's very few perfected souls within this world. We have there's a few. But we're all struggling. The sannyasi struggle, the grihastha struggles. Until we have conquered our mind, conquered our senses, and have love for Krishna, we will have trouble. So, yeah.
I want to ask you about what will be the situation when the man is a devotee and the woman is a devotee, and then they reach the age when it is said in the scripture that the man is supposed to leave home and abandon his family, and not abandon, but renounce his family. So my question is, when a man and woman are devotees, can they stick together to the end of their lives? And is it okay? Or is it better for the man to...
So the question is, for those who didn't hear it, if the man and woman are both devotees and they get to be of the proper age to renounce, is it required, or can they just continue to stay married up until old age?
Or maybe your personal question to you, how will you finish your marriage if it's not so much private?
We're out here with you today. or at the festival. I mean, we're still working. My wife is a school teacher. I'm still do, you know, I do business, but you know, I take Vanaprastha vacations. I go on a couple of weeks in Vanaprastha and come back. Well, this is Prabhupada describes the beginning of Vanaprastha is that he's at home, then he goes out, he comes back, stays for a while, everything's okay, business is, you know, the house is all right, he goes out, comes back. He goes out with his wife sometimes. They go to the pilgrimage, they go to some temples, they go to a Croatian festival, and they come back home, check on the kids, everything's all right, feed the cat, and go off again. Actually, we have a cat, but she lives outside. Yeah. And we didn't go to buy a cat. The cat just came and never left. We fed it once and we couldn't get rid of it.
And then she never left. This is like 11 years ago. So she stays outside, we in our garage, she sleeps up in the garage, and she doesn't come in the house, and we named her Yogi Cat.
And her job is to keep the mice away. So Prabhupada said that, you know, dogs have a job. Actually, we asked this question in class. Many of you were in class this morning? Anybody in class this morning? A lot of you. So they were talking about dogs in the class a bit. So I asked the question to Vyasaki, you know, what kind of, you know, what about dogs and pets? And in my mind, he didn't complete the answer. Practically, Prabhupada's purport on, you know, in one purport, he says, dogs are the number one non-devotee because they pass urine on the tulsi plant. This is exactly Prabhupada's quote. So if somebody wants to know about dogs, that's what Prabhupada said about dogs. And Prabhupada also said, he gave me a chance to clarify that my point in the class. And Prabhupada said that dogs have a duty, a job, and their job is to, you know, be the watchdog, and that they should be staying outside. But in Western society, people are treating their dogs better than they treat their children sometimes. We had, there was a famous rich lady, Leona Helmsley. Her husband owned the Empire State Building in Manhattan. And she owned many, you know, they owned many hotels. Very, very rich lady. So she died recently. And in her will, she left $12,000 to her dog for maintenance of her dog. So people love their dogs more than they love people because the dog is always happy. You ever seen that unhappy dog? Dog is always smiling, tongue out, happy, happy, happy. Never depressed, never morose, and always happy to see you. When you come in the house, the dog runs up, jumps on you. So people love their dogs because, hey, you know, they're happier than my spouse. Like, you know. So we got off the subject. Thank you for that. That's why I stay married. My wife keeps me on track. Otherwise, that's what women are there for. So Prabhupada talks about sannyas and all of this and vanarashram, you know, and stages of life. But in practically speaking, I mean, he never said that everyone should. And we see in the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he did not take sannyas at 55 or 60. He was married up until his very old age, and in his very old age, he just kind of did like Babaji. You know, he just stayed and chanted there in Navadvipa area where his house was. But he never officially, you know, put on saffron, and he never went out, you know, wandering the country giving lectures on Bhagavatam.
It's really a state of consciousness. That's what it is. you can stay in that ashram and still be a renunciate. But it's your consciousness.
It is the state of consciousness. You can renounce sex life and, you know, everything that goes along with grihastha life, but still wear white. It's actually a state of consciousness. It's not just about the color that you wear.
For example, ISKCON today, we have Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. He's a householder, then married. He came to the movement married. He's been married since I, you know, when I joined in 71, he was there with his young family. So he's always been a married man, and he's still married. And I'm 54. He's got to be, in his mid-60s. But he's not taking sannyas, and he's preaching. He's GBC. He's doing, you know, so many things. He has no. Prabhupada said, if your situation is not undesirable, there's no reason to change it. You know, his wife is a great devotee. She encourages him, lets him do all the preaching he wants. There's no problem. You know, if there's a problem that you need to move on, like Prabhupada's situation, where his wife was not encouraging or even assisting, then you have to make an official move on to the next stage. But if your wife is a preacher too and everyone's preaching, no problem. Okay? So we're ready to go for the wedding? I heard they had big cake. So weddings and cakes go together. So let's all go up and then give them all our blessings. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
Well, the cup.
So after the meeting,